You are listening to a free version of Majority Report with Sam Steeter. To support this show and get another 15 minutes of daily program, go to majority.fm, please.
The Majority Report with Sam Steeter, where every day is casual Friday. That means Monday is casual Monday. Tuesday, casual Tuesday. Wednesday, casual hump day. Thursday, casual Thurs. That's what we call it. And Friday, casual Shabbat. The Majority Report with Sam Steeter.
It is Friday, September 7th, 2018. My name is Sam Steeter. This is the five-time award-winning Majority Report. We are broadcasting live steps from the industrially ravaged Gowanus Canal. In the heart of, I can't even remember, downtown Brooklyn, USA. On the program, it's so casual, folks, I forgot the opening that I've only said nearly, well, not 2,000 times.
Do you remember the old one?
Something in the fashionable Dollar Lunch District. Of,
in the shadow of the New York Times building.
In the literal but not metaphorical shadow of the New York Times building. Yeah, it's all coming back to me now. Folks, it's Casual Friday. I am wearing a soft-collared shirt. And joining us today is Heather Parton, or Digby, from the blog Hullabaloo. And then, ostensibly, to give us a film recommendation, but she never has and never will, Judy Gold on A Tale of Censorship. Also on the program today, four, count them, four examples of when Brett Kavanaugh may have perjured himself. Past testimony to the Judiciary Committee comes out in the release of a small tranche of emails. Meanwhile, in Delaware, Carper wins, but Harris overperforms. Progressive building a beachhead in Delaware. The economy adds more jobs, some minimal wage growth. Mayhem at the White House, but only on days that end with a Y. Meanwhile, Alex Jones deplatformed. Twitter drops the hammer. And the heartwarming story of a billionaire opioid developer who patents the treatment for opioid addiction. And lastly, Congress looking to boot 500,000 children, nearly 700,000 elderly, and 1 out of 10 disabled people who are on food assistance. All that and more on today's program. Yes, folks, it is a casual Friday. Right now, as we speak, the Senate Judiciary Committee is in closed session with Brett Kavanaugh. I don't know. There's nothing necessarily to be made from that. It's unclear whether they will go back to more public testimony. We are still sort of waiting to see the sort of the denouement of the story about Cassowitz. The Cassowitz firm that turns out that, and I think this
Cassowa.
I'm not familiar.
It appears that Brett Kavanaugh is good friends with a member of Mark Kassowitz's firm. But I still am sort of pursuing that. I've seen this name, Ed McNally, bandied about. That would be odd if he forgot that one of his good friends worked at that firm. I need a list to see if one of my good friends worked there and if I can remember talking to them.
Well, let's be fair here. So I'm friendly and would consider myself friends with Ben Mankiewicz, right? Now, a lot of people tell me that he works at TYT. I don't know every single employee at TYT.
That's true.
So I couldn't possibly confirm that.
Right. There's no way to know. You need a list. So we're down at this point to four instances where Brett Kavanaugh may have perjured himself in the last round of hearings he had back in the, I believe it was the aughts in 06, when he was up for his current position as a federal circuit judge. One was that Manny Miranda. We talked about that a couple of days ago when there was a theft, essentially, of Democratic strategy memos as to how they were going to deal with some nominees of the Bush administration in various judicial positions. And a guy named Manny Miranda sent Brett Kavanaugh these talking points and said, we have a mole. And Brett Kavanaugh sort of fibbed that he ever got any of that information. And it appears that maybe we now see emails to that respect. There's also the vetting of William Pryor. He was asked in that same hearing if he was involved in the vetting of Judge Pryor, who has some very extreme, to say the least, positions. He claimed he was not involved in that. Emails show that he was. He was asked if he was involved in any part of the warrantless wiretapping program, and it now appears that he had some contact with John Yoo. We'll get to that a little bit later. And also, he's been asked if he thought Roe is a settled law, and he, in the course of getting some anti-abortion women to write an op-ed in favor of a judge during those Bush years, he basically corrected their op-ed to say, well, actually, a lot of people consider it not settled law. So, I mean, these are, I don't know if these things will move anything, but I do know that over $600,000 has been raised contingent upon Susan Collins voting against Kavanaugh. If she votes for him, that $600,000 will be delivered to a someone to run against Susan Collins in Maine. I think it's about half of what she has in terms of cash on hand. But we will get into a lot of this with Digby in a few moments. First, however, we do have my sister, first thing in the morning, was like, sent this to me. She's like, hey, did you see this? And this is like a classic, like, Matt pick, right? This is a Matt pick. It's a Friday, folks. We can still laugh at some of the small idiosyncrasies of the insane guy who's in the White House. Here he is last night at a rally in Montana, President Trump, attempting to say the word anonymous. I mispronounce things on a daily basis.
Heteronormative, I think, tripped you up yesterday.
Heteronormative got me yesterday. I say
as it.
I say Kamala
normally
instead
does.
Of Kamala or
Kamala.
I don't know what I.
Milo Yiannopoulos. That one's just funny.
There's plenty that
Milo Yabba Dabba Do.
But that said, the way that he tries to cover for it, I think, is pretty fun. Part here is President Trump referring to the op-ed published in the New York Times a day or two ago by a so-called anonymous senior White House official.
The latest act of resistance is the op-ed published in the failing New York Times by an anonymous, really an anonymous, gutless coward. You just look.
Can we do play that one more time? It's so good because he goes, he realizes he's mispronouncing it halfway through the first time he says it. So he tries to swallow it and then repeat it, and he still can't get it.
The latest act of resistance is the op-ed published in the failing New York Times by an anonymous, really an anonymous, gutless coward.
Really?
You just look.
Anonymous. Really anonymous. It was nice. As soon as I heard that, I was like, oh, we should find that Sesame Street thing. And sure enough, somebody Somebody beat us to the punch. I guess it's Twitter handle Levi Gibeon. Here it is.
An ominous.
Yeah, there's nothing better.
So good.
I feel like that totally captures it. Folks, BetterHelp is affordable, private, online counseling. You get unlimited access to licensed, trained, fully accredited therapists that's perfect for you on your phone, on your computer, through text, voice, or video chat. They're LGBT friendly. It's great for couples counseling, anything else you're going through in life right now. All you need to do is go to betterhelp.com/majority. You fill out a questionnaire. They match you with a counselor who's perfect for you. You can start counseling today. And if you decide you don't like the therapist, you don't vibe with it, you're matched with whoever you match with, you can switch whenever you want. It's less expensive than in-person counseling, but you're still getting the same great help from licensed professionals. And if you have trouble affording it, BetterHelp has financial aid available. You're always connected to your counselor. You have unlimited access, which means you can talk to them every day if you want. You can connect from anywhere, on your phone, on your computer. You're not wasting time traveling to someone's office. Some people are not comfortable necessarily being face-to-face with their therapist. I'm not saying you should be anonymous, but it's BetterHelp solves all these problems. And also, it's more affordable. Licensed professionals, we have had a decent number, frankly, of listeners who have been using the service, and we've gotten a good feedback. You can sign up right now, save on quality professional therapy by going to betterhelp.com/majority. That's betterhelp.com/majority. Going to take a quick break. When we come back, Digby. We are back. Sam Seder on the Majority Report. Folks on the phone, it is always a pleasure to welcome back to this program the proprietor of the Uber blog, Hullabaloo, and writer for Salon.com, Heather Parton, or Digby. Hello, Heather. How are you?
Hi, Sam. I'm fine. How are you doing?
I'm doing good. Hold on for one second. Okay. I on Fridays, I look back on the week and I just sort of am shocked. Like I was just, I pulled that Trump had blasted Sessions for charging Collins and Hunter Duncan before the midterms. And I was like, didn't that happen like 6 months ago? And it was, no, it was 5 or 6 days ago. But it's been a crazy week, you know, theoretically a 4-day week, right? Everybody took off for Labor Day, but there's a lot of stuff that's been packed into this week. And I'm not convinced that that is a coincidence. But let's start, and I'm talking a little bit about that letter, which I think has gotten outsized attention, but I don't know that that wasn't part of the plan a little bit. But let's talk about Brett Kavanaugh, because I think the Democrats, you know, taking a 30,000 foot view here, I think the difference of having, you know, and I have my issues with them as in terms of their politics, but the difference of having Booker and Kamala Harris on that Judiciary Committee is sort of stunning in a way.
Oh, it is. And, you know, and I agree absolutely with you. I mean, you know, we'll see what happens with politics and what have you. I don't even want to talk about that right now. But, yes, I mean, if you look at that panel, you know, with the exception of Dianne Feinstein and Patrick Leahy, both of whom are quite elderly, and it shows. But on the Republican side, it is 100% white guys, most of them elderly. You know, there is absolutely, you know, they are just as doctrinaire as it gets. And on the Democratic side, it's this diverse group. It's full of women. There's Mazie Hirono. There's Kamala Harris. There's Amy Klobuchar. There's Cory Booker. And they're much more youthful. They're much more dynamic. I mean, it's one of those times. I mean, usually I've seen a lot of these Supreme Court hearings in my life now. And I'm telling you, they are usually a pretty staid kind of, you know, really depressing sort of ritual in which you kind of, you know, the outcome already. And you're just sort of watching everybody go through the motions. And, of course, you know, we're pretty clear. It's unlikely that Kavanaugh is going to be defeated here. Maybe something will happen. But to just see the Democrats actually kind of put up a fight, be able to articulate these issues that are important to us as progressives, as Democrats, to be able to sort of have some kind of energy in this whole thing, I think was, you know, that to me, that was, you know, kind of a relief, because I feel that going, you know, we're at a moment of great anticipation for this election season and the election coming up in 2 months. And to see that, to me, it was sort of emblematic of sort of how I feel that the two parties are at the moment. You have this robotic lockstep Republican Party that they can't even find it in themselves to criticize the president or to do anything about the president. Forget the criticism. They might come out and say some little, you know, have some little, oh, I'm so concerned, but they don't do anything. And then on the other side, you see a lot of energy. So to that extent, I mean, it's not much, but at least in terms of the Supreme Court, but the politics seem to me to be it made me feel a little bit optimistic that maybe the Democrats are going to actually be able to do something going forward, even if they're kind of stuck now with a lack of institutional power.
Right. I mean, and I guess it remains to be seen. I mean, but I think that the one, I got to say, it's nice to have youth there, like you say, also some prosecutorial chops. And I would also say this is the value of having two people at least who are running for president sitting on that committee. Right. Because they are highly incentivized to separate themselves from the pack. And what's also nice, and I think is sort of an indication of where the center or the energy of the Democratic Party is that they're setting themselves apart by being specific, pretty aggressive. And that's good. And I think effective. I mean, Cory Booker basically challenged the Republicans to kick him out of the Senate, which I can certainly see how, like, you know, it's a win-win situation for him. right? Like,
exactly.
I think they kick him out of the Senate.
Bring it, right?
Yeah, kick me out of the Senate, and I will go immediately to my swearing-in ceremony for the inauguration. But Kavanaugh, I think they were able. I mean, Kavanaugh turns out to be not a terribly adept nominee in terms of deflecting things. Like, I mean, just the Kamala Harris, he didn't need to spend 8 minutes to get to, like, I don't know. Right. Like, you know, you could have said that in 30 seconds and said, like, I just don't know. I may have. I don't know where everyone I've spoken to works, you know, and that could have been.
And it turns out that the guy that one of his best friends works there. So, it's absolute and utter nonsense.
Works at Casa. Oh, is that where he works? Yes.
Oh, we never talked about that. I never knew. How interesting. I know. It's absurd. And of course, they've talked about the Mueller investigation. I mean, that just, look, hey, he could have very easily said, well, you know, I have a good friend, he works there, and, you know, yeah, sure, we talk about what's in the paper, but I haven't made any judgments or blah, blah, blah. You know, anybody with any kind of skill at this sort of thing would have done that. And this is a guy who also was found to have lied about the fact that he helped prepare previous nominees or potential nominees for the Supreme Court when he was in the Bush administration. So this guy's not very good. And when you look back at his record, look, I mean, let's face facts. He's just a right-wing hack. That's all this guy is. He has no business being on any court. I mean, this is a guy who back in the 90s spent, you know, months and months and months pursuing the Vince Foster alleged scandal.
Yeah.
Long past the time when it was very clear and obvious that everybody knew what had happened, that the guy had been hounded into committing suicide, basically, by people like Brett Kavanaugh. But he knew it. He knew that the suicide was there, and he just kept, you know, let's just keep going after this. This is really good. You know, we're going to really get in there. And torturing the family of Vince Foster in the process. He's a right-wing hack and one of the worst kind, you know, that really kind of bloodthirsty, take no prisoners. That, you know, I think he's going to be worse than Clarence Thomas on the court. He's going to be worse than Antonin Scalia. I mean, this guy has no judicial temperament whatsoever. He's been involved in the trenches in the worst, every horrible moment of the past 25 years of conservative movement atrocities. He's been in the middle of, up to and including torture. He was in on that too. I mean, this guy is the last person in the country who should be on the Supreme Court. It's just, of course, this is who Trump nominated. And he didn't even know he was doing it, by the way. This isn't a Trump thing. This is a Republican Party thing.
Well,
it's a Don McGahn thing, a Federalist Society thing.
You know, the interesting thing about that, though, is that Kavanaugh was not on the original list. Kavanaugh was not on that original list. And that, I think, you know, there could have been more opportunity. And I don't know if the hearings are over, to be honest with you. I can't quite tell. I mean, they seem to be in closed door session. That doesn't mean that they won't come out for more public questioning. Yeah. And I don't know if they're dealing with the email situation or what. And we should say that one of the things I think the Democrats effectively did was to make it really clear that Chuck Grassley's program of, you know, confidential committee documents as decided by a random Republican lawyer, is not exactly, a process full of any type of integrity. I think the Democrats exposed that fairly well. But I also think they could have made hay on the, you know, asking Kavanaugh, like, why do you think you were added when the president started feeling like he was in some type of jeopardy, legally speaking? Like, why do you think you made this list late when this list has been around and suddenly you sort of jumped to the front of the line? I mean, because, again, this is all about coming up with a non-ideological argument
for as cover right. for folks like Manchin and Heidi Heitkamp and whatnot. Like they're Matt Leck, who's from those parts, has been noticing on Twitter that the Republicans, North Dakota Republicans, are trying to hammer Heidi Heitkamp for not reacting vociferously enough against the way the Democrats are treating Kavanaugh. I don't know how much, you know, resonance that has. Right. But that, I think, is their way of saying, like, imagine what we're going to do if you vote against him type of thing.
Yeah.
And I don't know how much resonance that has with voters, but that's clearly what their game plan is. But this guy now, I mean, it seems apparent that he's got perjury issues and, you know, from Susan Collins' perspective, like, you may have Roe v. Wade issues.
Oh, I think he definitely has Roe v. Wade issues. I mean, I guess he, you know, the emails that they unearthed with him talking about Roe, she dismissed. But she, you know, clearly she's looking for reasons to dismiss it. We don't know what's in that these documents that they're talking about behind closed doors. The suspicion is that there's something, there's stuff there, right? I mean, the Democrats have certainly been throwing out a lot of hints that there's stuff in there that they want, and Booker and Leahy, releasing some of those documents and, you know, having that big brouhaha. But, you know, one suspects that there's stuff in there that hopefully, and presumably Collins has access to that stuff, too. You know, I mean, the strategy that you lined out, I really think is the strategy they're employing, which is they're trying to line up their people, get the red state Dems on these process arguments, keeping them, on the team, and then hopefully just, you know, providing just enough to get Collins and Murkowski maybe to come over. I mean, who knows if it'll work, but it's really the only plan they had, right? I mean, what else? I don't know what, at the end of the day, there was going to be a vote, and they had to figure out a way to try to get the vote, and the only way Collins will do it, and then there is a lot of evidence that she doesn't want to be the deciding vote on this. I mean, this would be her legacy, I think. She'd be the person who enabled the reversal of Roe versus Wade, if that happens.
Right.
If they keep all the Democrats in line, and she has to make that deciding vote, and she doesn't want to do that. So this is their plan. I don't know if it'll work, but it does seem as though it's sort of going that way, And, you know, I mean, it's gone as you know, there are many ways they could have gone after Kavanaugh. And there's some, I think, you know, going back into the 90s, that Vince Foster stuff, for instance. Apparently, he said there that there should be no attorney-client privilege between Foster and his lawyer because Foster was dead. I mean, he made that argument over and over again, which is just, you know, bizarre. And especially considering what we're talking about now with attorney-client privilege and, you know, Trump and the White House lawyer and McGahn and all this other stuff, you know, there's a lot in Kavanaugh's history as an attorney and as a right-wing operative that was, you know, ripe for discussion. And I'm kind of surprised that, by the way, that this is it for the hearings. I mean, I guess we don't really know, as you say, and there's this closed door. There's going to be testimony. There's testimony from other people, and then I guess they're not going to vote for another week or two. Did I hear that right?
Yeah.
So I don't know what's going to happen in there.
Yeah, it's unclear to me what there is a feeling that something is being discussed, right? Like that there is some procedural thing that's being discussed that that Grassley is having to move to a Plan B. Like that there maybe there are members of the committee who are starting to get a little bit nervous and that things are moving to a Plan B. But I don't think we'll have a sense of that until either end of day today or maybe, you know, sometime early next week. But, you know, I think as far as these things go, the Democrats have done a fairly decent job. Brett Kavanaugh is not a very popular guy. I guess today he introduced was it today or at the end of the day yesterday where he introduced all the members of the basketball team that he coached, which, of course, is, you know, exactly what you're looking for in a Supreme Court justice.
Very important.
Well, I mean, that's interesting, too, because I you know, there was some criticism of this father of this slain high school student from Parkland, you know, going up and clearly trying to engage in some type of moment that would expose Kavanaugh or make him embarrassed. But if you're going to go out there and sell a Supreme Court justice because he's good in a carpool, it seems to me pretty legit territory to say, how do you react to someone who's lost their daughter because of a right that you sort of inflate? I mean, you know, that to me seems to be fairly, you know, fair territory. If that's
it's legitimate. And the thing is that, you know, what did it expose about this guy? To me, that was really very revealing about Kavanaugh, the carpool dad. I mean, the guy walks up to him. It was on film. The look on his face was just absolute, utter disdain for this guy. And I, you know, I mean, he had to know there were cameras on him. He had to know there were people to look at anyone who was holding out his hand that way, regardless. But of course, I mean, everybody says, yeah, he heard him. I mean, you could see how close they were. He said, hi, I'm, you know, from the Parkland, whatever. And he's a polite, you know, middle-aged white guy, right? I mean, I don't know why Kavanaugh, you know, would make any assumption about him one way or the other if he couldn't hear them. But he did hear him, and the look on his face was absolutely, completely revealing of who this man is. I mean, that's disgusting. I don't care what side of the political aisle you're on, much less someone who's supposedly going to be calling balls and strikes, right? Completely neutral and fair without any preconceived conditions. That you meet the father of a slain teenager, and that's your reaction to him. Well, we know who this man is, don't we? And then according to the dad, he says that Kavanaugh personally identified him to the Capitol Police, which is even more disgusting.
Right.
I mean, this is who this person is. And to me, that was just so, you know, it made him an illegitimate nominee just with that alone. If I knew nothing else about him, that's all I would
To be fair, he could have been keeping the carpool safe. Now, let's talk about this op-ed in the New York Times. It's become sort of this fun parlor game to guess who it is. I personally think that it's probably a committee of people. Like I think that if there is an end to this, there's going to be a half a dozen people who are going to claim that they were part of at least contributing to that, or they were aware of it.
Well, they're already doing that. You know, the Daily Beast had a story about how the resistance within the White House is fist bumping. You know, give me a break.
I'm struck by there's a couple of things. One is that this is clearly somebody who is trying to both keep themselves at arm's length from the taint of Trump, clearly trying to separate Trump from Republicans and conservative movement, also trying seemingly unaware of what they're engaging in is, in my estimation, arguably some type of coup. I mean, it's one thing, it's one thing to have a bureaucracy that slow walks things. It's another to have like upper management not delivering orders in a concerted fashion, you know, because they think he's un-American because he's for tariffs. I mean, that to me seems beyond the pale. And it also occurs to me that they must have known that the Kavanaugh hearings were happening, right? Like, it's that dynamic of the timing of this is a little bit weird to me, too. Like, why did the Times print that during this week?
Well, I think it was who knows? But, I had assumed when it came out that it was written after the excerpts of the Woodward book had come out, right? Because it was sort of, the idea was it was sort of backing up Woodward's thesis. And not just Woodward, by the way. I mean, Michael Wolff's book, Omarosa's book, you know, all of the ones other than the good little sycophants who signed their NDAs and wrote Happy Talk like Sean Spicer. But the critical books that have come out have all said the same thing. And Woodward, you know, kind of brought his own you know, questionable gravitas to the matter with his book, that the White House is in total chaos and the president of the United States is an imbecile. I mean, you know, we knew that. I can see it every day. You know, this is not really all that revelatory, but the idea that there are people in the White House who, that's what sort of Woodward sees, is there are people in there, all of whom told him this, that were trying to save the republic from this imbecile. Well, that's nice. You know, thanks a lot. But, and you know, I appreciate all your, you know, thank you for your service. But that's not how this works. That's not the way that this is supposed to work. My feeling is the timing. Now, the New York Times said that this was actually in the works before the excerpts of the Woodward book came out. But my suspicion is whoever wrote it is somebody who spoke with Woodward and knew that, right, Woodward's book was coming out. So this person knew the outlines. And, you know, I mean, I have no idea who it was. And frankly, I don't really give a damn. I don't care. It doesn't matter. The substance of what they're saying, though, is actually rather important. And my personal view is, I think you may be right that the Kavanaugh hearings coming up may have been something that propelled them. Maybe even at the time they thought that they could do a big distraction, drop this thing, not knowing that the Woodward excerpts were going to come out this week. Maybe they thought they'd be first. I don't know. But I also think it has to do with the elections. The way that read to me was that the Republicans are, all the new polling is showing that Republicans are bleeding suburban, white, college-educated voters. They are absolutely bleeding those people, men and women. I mean, women are, white college-educated women are down in the low 20s now in supporting Trump and approving of him, and they are not planning to vote for Republicans. So they're going to have a big problem, maybe even in the Senate, with the precipitous drop in, right, support from that particular constituency. There's a lot of those people in this country, and most of them voted for Republicans in the past. So they have a big problem. And I felt like the thrust of that was, hey, guys, you know, don't panic. The establishment Republicans, we're in here. We're keeping an eye on things. You got your tax cuts. And the person went out of their way to mention that, and deregulation, right, and all the stuff that those people suppose, you know, the good familiar establishment Republican line, right? Low taxes, low regulation, blah, blah, blah. Don't worry. We're getting all that done for you. We're keeping him in line. We're not going to let him go too crazy. We've got it. Don't go out and do something silly like vote for Democrats. You'll regret it. Now, at the end of the thing, it said, you know, the citizens have to rise up and do whatever. Well, my assumption is he's talking to Republicans about rising up against Trump within the party, not talking about, you know, go out and vote for Democrats. We need to turn this, you know, government over. Or the party is, you know, in disarray or whatever the hell. So I felt like this was as much and the reason that it went to the New York Times is because those people read the New York, right, Times. They're not the Fox-watching Trump voters. Those are Republican, you know, kind of wealthier suburban types. And that's what they would read this and go feel a sense of relief that maybe things hadn't gone completely off the rails and that they could sort of depend on the Republican Party to reinvent itself and be the party that they love. Maybe we don't want to destroy it. So that's how I looked at it. And I, you know, everybody has their theory about what this was about. But I see a sense of absolute, utter panic setting in among Republicans about what's coming up in this election. I mean, it really, you know, we're starting to see people. Stuart Rothenberg, who's a Republican, said yesterday that the Senate was in play.
Yep.
And I haven't heard that from anybody up until now. So, you know, they must know. I would assume they know what's going on.
Right. Well, now we're starting to get a better sense, theoretically, of who's actually going to come out to vote, right? You're starting to see more polls that are trying to assess who exactly will turn out. And that has really been the question. That will be the question ultimately. I mean, it probably is in all elections on some level. But that is the question that is sort of moving to the forefront right now. It's who's going to show up to vote in these midterms. And it just seems like Democrats are that much more motivated to do so. And I think you're right. And what also strikes me is that, you know, I don't think Bannon was involved in this in any way, but it reminds me of Bannon's whole strategy in putting out that Clinton cash thing via a journalism institute. and feeding it to the New York Times. Like, there is a, you do get the sense that at least on this sort of like communications level, there is just a slightly less shameful and more sophisticated operation with some of these people. Because I just, the just the nature of this was just, it is completely about the an agenda. Like, Republican, I mean, the New York Times was basically just saying, like, we're going to give you unfettered opportunity to just tell us your spin, really, right?
Right.
Like, there's no, you know, the idea, like, I guess the point being that there's no evidence that this was written in a way to further the supposed agenda that the author supposedly has. Right? Like, we're protecting America. Well, if you're protecting America, this does not. Why are you revealing that you're there? Why are you revealing that you're there to Trump? Well, how does it help America for us to know this? It's so clearly a CYA, you know, among other things, that I don't know. I mean, I guess I can understand why the Times printed it, but I am also sort of skeptical a little bit about, you know, how that platform is being used in some way.
Well, yeah. I mean, you know, to me, that I agree with you completely. I think the minute I read it, I'm going, you know, it reflex spin. And, you know, I don't want to engage in, you know, the parlor game of who did it, but I would just say that I have a belief somehow that somehow this was not done by some, you know, elder statesman who's trying to save the country. This was done by a political spinmeister who's looking beyond the Trump era, maybe going on the assumption that Trump is at best a one-term president and setting up the post-Trump era with this. You know, don't worry, there were people there who were keeping the flame alive, everybody.
Right.
They were just doing the right thing.
We were just there to protect the country. We didn't like them either.
Right. You know, look at us. You know, we're patriots. In my piece for Salon on this, you know, right? You know, this is if these patriotic resistance fighters within the White House, you know, are so great, they sure are doing a terrible job. I mean, they still put babies in cages. Only the courts are stopping Trump from the absolute worst that he's doing on domestic policy against, you know, refugees and immigrants and all of that. And on foreign policy, if the story is true that Mattis stopped Trump from, you know, ordering an assassination, an illegal assassination of a foreign leader, however, you know, odious that foreign leader is, I guess that's a good thing. Maybe there's more that has been stopped along that line, but really that's not how it works. And by the way, most of foreign policy has been an absolute dumpster fire from top to bottom. In every respect, Trump has made an absolute hash of American foreign policy across the board. And, you know, the only reason that we're not in a war is just kind of random coincidence at this point, because he has done everything he can to just completely destroy America's alliances with no clue as to why he's doing it, with no plan on what's going to come afterwards. And it's all based on some weird idea that, you know, they're not paying enough protection to America. It's something he came up with back in the mid-1980s and can't even explain why he thinks this. So, you know, if these guys are the guardrails, pretty weak guardrails. I mean, I have to say, I don't think they're doing that great of a job, because this is a mess. So this idea that, well, don't worry, guys, we've really got it in hand. We got this. Just stick with us. I don't know. I mean, I think they could do better, and they certainly could do better. If one person would quit, including Gary Cohn, the big hero of Woodward's book, and actually went out and said openly, with, you know, on television, wrote a big, you know, article, maybe write a book now about what's going on and tell it, say it like it is. Instead, all this kind of, what's with the sneaking? Why can't they say it? Why can't they just come out and quit and come out and you know, say they want to testify before Congress or whatever, you know, you do, and warn the American people. Who's resigned like that? Who? Not one.
Well, I mean, what's actually, it seems to me, is even, you know, forget this guy or these people, you know, that are behind this memo. Like, how do Republican leaders... I mean, that's the thing, is that we still, like, you know, where's Paul Ryan? And we're going to put this guy on the back of a milk carton. Where's Mitch McConnell? I mean, the idea that they don't have to address this, that they're, you know, that sort of the press has decided, like, we're not going to dog this, right, is sort of nuts to me. And I just, I mean, I've been saying the same thing for you know, 2 years. 3 years, but to me the free ride seems to be given to Republican leaders, because they're really the only ones who could do anything about any of this, and I would say the senators. So it's infuriating, but I guess you know, next week's a new week.
No, it's like, it's just so exhausting. I mean, who knows, you know, what's going to happen next week. But I guess, can I just point out what the highlight of the week is for me?
Please.
Is that Trump comes out after all of this stuff that's gone down. He's obviously melting down in the White House and just completely beside himself.
But he's been melting
really
down
helped.
In the White House for 2 years. It feels like a rolling meltdown, and he has no, it's almost as if, like, he is a wax candle, but within a glass case. So he just keeps melting and then rehardening and then melting and rehardening, and
exactly.
Nothing ever drips out.
Exactly. And it's so true. And I mean, but this is the highlight for me, is that in defending himself, I think it was yesterday. Yeah, it was yesterday. He came out and said, and quoted Kim Jong-un, complimenting him and saying that he has tremendous trust in Donald Trump, and saying, see, you know, look how beloved I am, because the most, you know, the most odious, violent, you know, tyrant in the world, and, you know, authoritarian thug, Kim Jong-un, he really likes me. He really thinks I'm great. And, you know, he said it at his rally, and everybody, yay, this crowd is clapping for Kim Jong-un. I mean, this is where we're at. That's the level of absurdity. I don't think that Saturday Night Live could have come up with that. I really don't. I mean, it is that completely bizarre sort of, I mean, the president of the United States is now defending himself by saying that the worst tyrant in the world really thinks he's terrific. So, you know, that's where we're at.
Well, before you go, I just saw this piece in Slate, where one of the author of the memos that were stolen by Manny Miranda, has come out and, you know, called for Kavanaugh's impeachment as a sitting judge, never mind, onto the Supreme Court. You know, one has to wonder if this stuff is, you know, if there's some type of momentum behind this. I mean, people have to remember, like, the Miranda was referred by the sergeant of arms to the DOJ for a criminal investigation.
Yes.
I mean, so this was not, you know, not nothing. The DOJ, of course, under Bush did not pursue it. But nevertheless, it was not nothing. And, you know, Brett Kavanaugh lied about it. He lied about the information he got and where he thought it was from. He thought mole is a very particular word, and he didn't he thought, well, mole, like a furry animal, you know, I mean, the guy knew he was getting stolen intel, and
yeah,
and he lied about it is really the issue. But we'll see.
Wow. And he wants to be on the Supreme Court. I mean, this isn't just any job, right? I mean, it's a lifetime appointment to the most important court in the world. And this guy's a liar. I mean, it doesn't surprise me, you know, Donald Trump nominating a liar to be a Supreme Court justice. Huh? You know, of course. But, yeah, I'm looking at this, too. And this is from Lisa Graves, I guess, who actually was on the email chains.
Yep.
That Kavanaugh was on in these documents, and says absolutely that he lied about it. I mean, that's perjury. It is perjury. You know, used to be considered a crime, you know.
Right. So, bad form for a guy looking for a job on the highest court in the land. Bad form.
Yeah, kind of a bad, bad look.
It'll be interesting to see. It'll be, I mean, you know, I don't want to sound divested from this in any way, but it's going to be interesting to see, like, is there anything that, you know, that can actually shame them or they can feel some type of political heat about in this moment, right? I mean, that's going to be...
Yeah, I mean, my thought had been that the most obvious play as the, you know, final Hail Mary would be to do something that would make Trump withdraw Kavanaugh because, and I assumed that would be something personal. They could find that he had said... My thought was that they would say that he told one of the senators or told some of the senators or get him to say it in open court that he would recuse himself, which would just absolutely send Trump into a tailspin. And he would, you know, could theoretically then maybe withdraw the nomination just out of pique. But that's, you know, that's such a long shot. Who knows? You know, I mean, I doubt it would work. This, though, I mean, is shame operative? With any of these people?
Well, no, I don't think shame is operative, but I think, you know, political pressure might be. And there may be, you know, this may be cutting the other way, right? Like they were hoping this is the way that they corral a height camp and a mansion, and it may end up being a way in which it like starts to undercut, you know, some of their more vulnerable senators. So, I guess we'll see. But Digby, as always, a pleasure. And next week is another miserable week.
Get some rest this weekend, everybody.
All right.
Thanks
Bye,
for
Digby.
Having me, Sam.
Thank you so much. Bye-bye.
Bye.
It's Friday. It's one of those Fridays. I'm exhausted, folks. I don't know what to tell you. Like,
We only had 4 days.
It was only 4 days,
and
it seems like it was like a lifetime.
I need a vacation from my vacation.
I think part of it is also maybe returning to school. Yeah, well, kids go back to school, and then all hell breaks loose. You know how that works.
Kids go back to school.
Folks, we're going to take a quick break, and when we return, on the phone, she just texted me. She said like. You're interrupting Barry. Is Obama speaking right now?
Obama is speaking right now.
Oh, is that what's happening?
It's a very big speech.
He's doing open mics now?
His name is, by the way, Donald Trump gets fatter every time you see him.
Saul said something very much like that. Did I mention that the other day?
I think you did about the toilet.
Yeah. Yeah. Saul was...
I said Obama. He said, I hope he gets a toilet, breaks it, and then just has to poop in his pants all the time.
That's right.
That's right.
Saul wrote that material.
Shout out to Saul.
It's a CIA psyop.
All right. Well, we're going to take a break. We'll pull Judy away from her trip down memory lane watching Barack Obama speak. Where is he on the campaign trail?
He's receiving an award at the University of Illinois. And this is definitely his most, aggressive anti-Trump speech that he's given. And he tipped his hat to Medicare for All, which is very annoying. Yes, he did.
Would have been nice a while ago, Barry.
The formulation.
Second thought.
That I actually IM'd it to you guys.
You know what? TPP sounds like a bad idea, too.
You know what? No, this is apparently, and this is from Daniel Marin.
And I just want to say one more thing. Right. Goodwin Liu should have nominated that guy.
Goodwin Liu is a great Supreme Court justice. And trade deals are written in favor of pharma companies. Totally unfair. Obama says, this is Daniel Marin's. Democrats aren't just running on good old ideas like raising the minimum wage. They're running on good new ideas like Medicare for All. So, I don't know if I accept the formulation.
Just heard about that. I had no idea.
It's really a 2018 concept.
Bernie broke it out in 2016. Now we've crunched the numbers and it looks good.
He brought it to the marketplace of ideas.
Yeah, definitely not something that even Truman talked about.
All right, we're going to take a quick break. When we come back, Judy Gold.
hurts me, dear, to see you got no faith in yourself. It bothers me now to watch you. You got no faith in your own self. You listen more to your friends than to your own heart inside. Well, you listen to them, oh, but you hide. You don't got nothing to be afraid of. You're not as bad as you think, and you're always putting yourself down. But I'm just gonna tell you that I like you. Darling, you always put yourself down, but I like you. That's all I came to say. Then there's no need to think that other people can do things better than you can do them, 'cause you got the same power in you. I got faith in you. Sometimes you don't have it in yourself, but I got faith in you. And our time is right now. Now we can do anything we really want to.
Yes, we are back. Sam Seder on the Majority Report. It is Casual Friday. And ladies and gentlemen, it is always a pleasure when we have the reason to celebrate Casual Friday by playing this song.
Level-headed.
Fuck you!
Calm, cool, and collected.
I have a bigger penis than him.
Judy Gold is on the line to keep us all connected.
What the fuck is the matter with him?
A steady hand to guide us. She'll keep us calm and carry on.
No fucking way!
Too bad Jimmy Reefer Cuck didn't find her worthy of a song. Well, Judy.
And he's such a fucking penis head liar. I'm not kidding. That's the president of the United States. That's the president. What the fuck? Like, this guy, how did this happen?
Judy? I don't know.
I mean, the melody is so, it's so catchy.
It's so haunting. Now
I can't take it. I cannot take it. You've interrupted my afternoon delight with Obama. I just paused it so I don't miss any of it.
What is he saying? What is
he's
he saying?
That, or does it matter? About everything. He's so eloquent. The way he speaks, and he's you know how calm he is, you know, and he makes so much sense in his vocabulary. I mean, like he's talking about all of it. All of it. Every bit of it. He is not stopping. He is hitting all of, and like, this is not who we are. And he basically said, let me tell you something. I don't need a tax break. I don't need it. He's like amazing.
It does occur to me that
he is back.
Donald Trump.
Yeah, he's back. Sorry.
Donald Trump might be the best thing that ever happened to Barack Obama.
You ready to come bat for the other team, Jenny?
Yeah, that's right, Ben. Barry, I love you. I love you, Barry.
I love you back.
Listen, he is hitting every single point and how what fucking ass. I mean, he's not saying fucking asshole, obviously.
He hitting the back walls in your
scumbag.
Brain.
Is he what?
Is he hitting the back walls?
What?
Never mind.
The back wall.
The kids today, Judy. You don't know.
We're taking your sexual. We're taking your sexual hints and running with them, Judy.
Oh right, I kind of gotcha. Oh, you young kids. Listen, let me tell you something. I'm telling you, this is the beginning of the fucking end of that scumbag. And what the fuck happened to Graham?
To Lindsey Graham? Nothing. He's the same cretin he's always been.
No, but remember he was like, this guy's crazy, blah, blah, blah. First of all, he needs to come right out of the closet, and fuck it, you know, like, I just, like, how do you fucking defend him? Who, the fact that anyone would say he's, like, sane, you know he's a fucking asshole. You know all of this shit is true.
I think Lindsey Graham thinks he's going to get a shot at Secretary of Defense or a Secretary of State. That's what he's looking at.
Right. Yeah, fuck every, you know, immigrant children in cages as long as he gets a fucking job.
Right.
Yeah, I think that's
and
his calculation.
How about, let me ask you a question. If there was a woman, okay?
What's that?
Never married, a woman never married, no relationship. You don't think they'd be calling, you know, like that was, you know, a senator for so long and a Republican. Like, do you think they would be, wouldn't they be calling her, oh, she's a dyke, she's this. How come he gets away with being a closet homo?
Yeah, I guess he's from...
Hey, Sam, I would go deep in on that for sure.
What's that?
As a straight male host, why does he get away with being a closet homo, Sam? Elaborate.
Right. Well, I...
Yeah.
I can only imagine. You know...
Did they go after Elena Kagan?
Because he was a jag.
Did they go after Elena Kagan for this?
Oh, yes.
Okay.
Oh, yes. Yeah.
Oh, yes. Without a doubt. I don't know how he gets away with it. It's interesting because you remember that guy Dreyer from California? I think that was his name. He was, I don't know if he was the whip, you know, in like 06 or, and I cannot remember who the reporter I was talking to told me that he has seen like a considerable number of his colleagues wouldn't even shake his hand because he was gay. They wouldn't even shake his hand. And he was part of the Republican leadership.
See how much we've
grown?
I bet they would shake his hand today.
Right.
Yeah,
today,
it's a
maybe.
New party.
Like, probably 75% of them would shake his hand. So
right.
I don't know how Graham has managed to get by. I mean, I've asked people from South Carolina who've just been, well, let's. There's just like a gentleman's understanding, I guess. And
oh, that's fine.
He's Volcel, okay?
He's what?
He's Volcel. Oh, so much lingo today. I'm sorry.
I know it.
Voluntary celibate.
You know what?
Oh.
It's a thing. Maybe he's like men going their own way.
Who is?
Lindsey Graham.
Please. You know he's not Volcel, okay?
Apparently, though.
He's fucking.
He.
And you know he takes it in the. He's the bottom, definitely.
Listen. I mean, I don't know.
Look at that hair.
I don't know.
Yeah.
I know. This is...
really?
I don't.
That's not what you were saying off air, though.
There is no one gayer than Pence, by the way. He's another one.
Well, but wait a second. Now, I think I've heard that Lindsey Graham actually travels with his partner.
I've actually heard that, too, that inside, you know, D.C. or wherever, he does have a sort of open, discreet relationship. I've heard that.
Really?
Yeah.
Well,
no word on whether or not he's the bottom,
even
though.
Even more
Judy.
Open. And he's definitely a bottom. Look at him. He looks like a woman.
Should we send in a spy to find out this compromat on him?
I'm finding out right now. I'm on the internet, and that whatever's on the internet is true.
We got a couple tasty little twinks on staff.
Mm-hmm. Who is that?
Who keeps saying that? Jamie.
Yeah.
Jamie.
Jamie, seriously, what happened to you? With the vocabulary.
I've been hanging with a bad crowd, Judy.
It's true. It's true.
I was so innocent when I started.
Yeah, well, this, yeah, the majority report has really, really corrupted Jamie. Now, all right. So, Judy, you're watching Obama.
Yeah,
have you been watching Brett Kavanaugh this week?
Oh, yeah. You know what I noticed about him? No. Whenever he's challenged, his lips, right? They, like, he purses his lips, and they look like Trump's asshole face a little bit. You know what I mean?
I know what you're talking about. He did that during, like, when he's Kasowitz?
When they're talking to him, his cheeks get red,
mm-hmm.
and then he does this thing with his lips. And the other thing is, who writes notes with a fucking Sharpie? Why does he have a fucking Sharpie?
Oh, shoot. I do.
Oh, God, really?
Yeah.
Why do you write with the Sharpie?
Just because it's big and it's like a big crayon.
Okay, great. Anyway, I've been watching. He's such a fucking... He thinks he's... First of all, what he did to Guttenberg. Like, you saw what a fucking asshole he was.
This is the guy, Fred Gutenberg. Is the father of of a victim from Parkland. And, yeah, he just turned on his heels. Wouldn't shake
the guy's
hand.
Yeah, but did you see him? He kind of looked at him like, go fuck yourself, and then turned around. That's exactly what he did. And you saw the real, like, and fuck you. And I coach my kids basketball, and I can't get you. That guy's never going to see his daughter again. And you're sitting there, oh, I get to coach basketball with Jenny and Susie and Betty and Fuck you. And then he doesn't even address when someone said, do you have anything to say to him? He doesn't even say anything. And then the constant, are you thinking that someone's, I am really in love with Kamala Harris. I mean, is she not the hottest thing?
I have to say, she was particularly competent and badass during that those hearings.
I thought she did a great job, but I'm confused. Is it Barack or Kamala or both? What's going on?
Listen, there's a Kinsey scale, and I used to think I was all six, but, you know, Barry, you know, can bring me down a little. Down to 5 or 4. Kamala brings me up to like 10.
There you go.
That's clear though, but I could see it's like first black president made Judy a little bit less gay. I mean, come on.
I mean, she is. How about how she has a smile on her face? She doesn't take any shit from him. And I fucking love Cory Booker. I mean, this is what we need. We need Democrats with balls. And it's finally, some people are like, you know, I can't deal with the way they fucking talk, like with the American. They're so fucking old and white. Like, shut the fuck up. You know, and the subtext of what they're saying is, you know, I didn't get to talk as long as you did. You're interrupting me. I mean, if we could really do the full subtext of what they're really saying, and they have to say it in this fucking bullshit way, the gentleman from, you know they want to say the fucking asshole, you know, from California wants to interrupt me. Go ahead, bitch. You know, that's what they want to fucking say, you know?
She is a total bitch. She won't stop.
I know. I can't take it. Like, the fact, first of all, Merrick Garland. Like, and then all they do is talk about, oh, they're politicizing it. You fucking started, you asshole. You started. You politicized it, you fuckhead.
I mean, in some respects, I mean, shouldn't that, did Obama bring that up today? I mean, he should have been the one saying.
Yes, he did. Yes, he did. Barry brought it up. That's what I'm telling you. He's hitting all the highlights. He's doing everything. He said, you know, for a year, they wouldn't, you know, because it was from me, from a Democrat. He is talking about everything. He stayed away. He let this fucking piece of shit ruin our country, and now he's like, all right, let's talk.
what's he going to do, though? Let's listen to a little bit of this. We have a little bit here.
I got to get out my vibrator. Wait a minute. Okay, go.
It's harder for young people to save for a rainy day, let alone retirement. So Democrats aren't just running on good old ideas like a higher minimum wage. They're running on good new ideas like Medicare for All, giving workers seats on corporate boards, reversing the most egregious corporate tax cuts to make sure college students graduate debt-free.
Now, Judy, like when I hear the Medicare for All thing, or when I hear him talk about, you know, retirement, it was only 4 years ago, maybe five, and I don't want to be a wet blanket here, but he was proposing cutting Social Security. They were floating the idea of raising the retirement, the Medicare eligibility age.
Tim, why do you have to fucking ruin everything? Seriously. and the other thing is, why do you have to pick the one part that's like a snooze fest, And B, all right, fine. He's not perfect, but...
Judy, that's not snooze fest for us here. That is not snooze fest.
That's what?
That is not. Honestly,
I didn't pick that. Matt just literally dropped the needle, as it were, on the
Medicare for All is not Medicare for All is yeah. That's our Kinsey scale.
But okay, all right. But fair enough. I mean, I don't want to be a downer. It's a Friday, and we people.
No, I get it.
But I mean. But it is a little bit.
Well, I understand. I get it. Okay. But the fact that, and it is a very important issue, but there are, more attractive issues you could have brought up.
Like what?
Okay. Like racism and the fucking Russians. And the way the press is treated, and he even said, he's like, look, I never said that Fox News was the enemy of the people.
Well,
they have every right to
But I mean, aren't they? I mean, on some level,
well, they are. I'm right. Just saying, but he never said shut down Fox News. He also addressed the anonymous, op-ed.
What did he say?
Or as we like to say, op-ed. what is that? A stroke? Is that a stroke? What was that?
It was sort of.
You can't even say anonymous. It was very strokey, wasn't it?
It was a little bit strokey.
Did you catch when he said "shlul" a couple months ago? Did you catch that one?
No.
Wait, so what did Obama say about the anonymous op-ed? And then I want to hear what your perspective is.
That they are not elected. That is not your elected official. That is someone, is that what, that's not democracy. That's not who is elected. That's someone who's appointed saying, I'm doing this. It's how fucking ridiculous it is. This guy is a fucking 2-year-old. He can't even say, okay? He's out of his fucking mind. He is mentally ill. He has these Nazi-like rallies where these fucking people who he wouldn't even let into Mar-a-Lago. If those people walked into Mar-a-Lago, I guarantee you, his Mexican doorman would be like, excuse me, can I see your reservation? Or blah, blah, blah. Okay? So shut the fuck up.
That's what Obama just said?
In a way.
Like, by the way, none of you fat fucks would be at Mar-a-Lago.
What did you think of that op-ed?
What did I think of?
The op-ed.
Initially I was like, oh my God, this is fucking awesome, right? And then I was like, this is pathetic. It went from thank God to this is fucking pathetic. And the fact, because then you see the reactions of Paul fuckface Ryan, and Sarah Huckabee Sanders, I mean, is going to hell in a fucking handbasket with her fucking fat ass father. I'm telling you, I hope they go together. I can't stand. I mean, the fact that she can stand there and lie. The fact that they are all about, well, our policies are getting, and they don't care. I mean, if Obama did act, I can't fucking believe this is happening, and he's still in office. How is he still there?
I mean, he's a very eloquent guy.
Right. This person wants to be, first of all, we know someone with over a sixth grade vocabulary wrote it. Okay.
Right.
So it can't be like Jared or, it's none of the, and John Jr. No fucking way. First of all,
Jared used to publish a newspaper.
Who did?
Kushner.
Jared. Yeah.
That's how I met him.
Wow. Ew, did you ever talk to him?
I did, yes. I met him at a New York Observer party. I don't know.
What was he like?
Just like a hollow pit of nothingness. I don't know. He was a dork.
Right.
He's like, hi, I'm Jared. Keep up the good work. Me.
Yeah.
I'm a nerd.
Right.
And that's like who is going to be our overlord now. It's kind of humiliating if you think about it.
It has been humiliating.
Right. I just don't know. I wake up, I read that op-ed, I was like, all right, this is it. And right. I have had so many this is it moments. And then Sarah Huckabee Fuckface and Kellyanne Cuntway and fucking Paul.
We should tell people these aren't their real names.
Fuckhead Ryan. Like, these people don't say, you know what, I've had enough.
They never will.
Like, they're scum.
Yeah. They never will. Although we should say, what is it? Paul Penis Head Fuckface Ryan? That actually is his name.
You are giving Trump a run for his money with these monikers. I like it.
Yeah.
Yeah, but you know what? Mike Pence is really a penis head, but he's such a fucking...
Now, Judy...
That's his lodestar.
Judy, now that you're saying these things about Trump people, my understanding is that this... That sometimes there's a price to pay for your criticism of Trump. Is that right? Can you talk about that?
You know what, Sam? That's very true. You know, I am very vocal about, you know, and I'm not, this is not a Republican, Libertarian, Democrat, Green Party, whatever you are. This is not about that. It is about the fact that this quote-unquote man, this misogynistic, this man, this person who lies, who has what he's done to immigrants and children and how he fucking wants to suck Putin's dick and the things that he says. I mean, the fact that he still has his job when anyone else in any other fucking job would be fired, okay? The fact that he behaves and is supposed to represent, he doesn't represent me. He's not a president. He has no respect for the office of the presidency, the Constitution, the veterans. What he did to John McCain, he is in such a low life. So, because I'm vocal about my feelings about this, I am now being canceled from gigs. Now, when I get on stage, I make people laugh. I don't even know what their party affiliation is. And when I do private gigs, I don't mention, you know, it's not about politics. It's about my job of making people laugh. So now I have just recently been fired from a job that I didn't even do yet, that I was booked in January.
Wow.
Because I was told, quote unquote, we're not singing from the same songbook. Let me ask you a question. When you go and hear an orchestra play, do you have any idea the political affiliation of any of those musicians or the conductor or anything? No, you're listening to the music. It's not, this is not right. This guy can say whatever the fuck he wants and keep his job. And my job is to make people laugh, which I hate to tell you, I've made plenty of Republicans laugh, okay? But, you know, it's ridiculous now. They have no sense of humor. None. Zero.
Well, I mean, you know, it's different. I mean, music is different. I mean, on some level than comedy, because comedy, you're trying to make a fairly literal point. I mean, I guess, you know, you could do that too with music. And I don't know if this place would want maybe, you know, somebody who's singing anti-war songs or, you know, rapping about.
Right, but I'm not. Look, I do plenty of gigs where they're like, okay, you know, synagogues. So I do a lot where they're like, can you not curse? Can you not mention politics? I'm like, of course. Fine. Right. You hired me. You're paying me a nice salary. I'm happy to do my act and talk about my mother and my kids and, you know, whatever funny stuff is going on.
So the point is not that your act is inappropriate. It's that we don't like the way you're vocalizing your politics.
Right. So I'm supposed to not have an opinion, I guess, or the fact that they can't separate the fact that I'm an entertainer. Look, you know, Jackie Mason, right?
Yeah.
Big Republican. If I listen to his old album, it's not like I'm going to be like, what a fucking asshole. I hate his politics. I can't laugh at this joke.
All right. I got to be, to be fair, that's what happens to me if I hear any Jackie Mason.
Really?
I just, yeah, F that guy.
They didn't cancel your show on Fire Island, though, right, Judy? I saw your poster last week,
no,
and I got really excited.
That was awesome. I had so much fun. That was a great show.
I can imagine.
No, they did cancel. It is on Long Island, and it is a Jewish organization. And they booked me in January and wrote to my agent a couple of weeks ago.
Well, wait a second. That to me seems strange, because it's not like last December you were all like, oh, we're going to give this Trump guy a chance.
Right. Exactly. Exactly. When I did the late show and I talked about how Trump needs therapy, you know, like it's not like you didn't know who I was, or maybe it's an LGBTQ or STUVWXYZ thing, but I doubt that because I've been out forever. You know, it's like, what is it? One board member who, you know, doesn't agree with, you know, my politics or my Twitter feed is like, oh, forget her. That's not how it works. I cannot rebook that date. I don't have time to rebook that date. I've had offers for that date that I have turned down because I was booked by them and signed a contract.
Yeah.
This has never happened before. Never, ever happened before.
It's pretty stunning. I mean, because you seem to me to be fairly Jewish friendly.
Shabbat shalom. Shabbat shalom. Hey, that's right. I am.
First she says that the president needs therapy. Now she wants to go with Barack Obama, who's a member of Hamas. Cancel her.
Rabbi? Rabbi? Can I speak to you for a moment?
That's incredible.
Can I, on a related note, can I just tell
Why
you?
Why people cancel?
Yeah.
I saw the flags in Cherry Grove on Fire Island at half-mast when I was there last week, and I was like, this better not be for that motherfucker, John McCain. And then I realized it was Aretha Franklin's funeral that day, so it was probably for her.
And then you were like, this better not be for that motherfucker, Aretha Franklin.
I love Aretha.
Talk about Aretha. Would you mind?
She was so good.
She was amazing. How about what Trump said about her, Judy? How about what Trump said about her? I would like a rant on that, if you don't mind.
Oh, the fact that she worked for him?
Yeah, exactly.
This guy is such a fucking racist pig. But that's okay, because he's like, I love Israel. So they're like, oh, okay.
Yes.
That's exactly what it is.
Right.
The same way Netanyahu is a tremendous racist, too. You know, I mean, let's be real.
Right. Exactly.
Yeah,
I mean,
like,
guess what I'm reading?
What are you reading?
The Plot Against America, Philip Roth.
That's interesting. I just saw somebody else reading that the other day. Why are you reading that now?
So prescient. I cannot. It's so what's happening. I don't know. I you know, he died, and I was like, you know what? I really love him. I'm going to read this book. I bought it a long time ago, and I never read it. And first of all, he's an amazing writer, but it's pretty unbelievable. I don't understand. Like, I also got a gig canceled in South Carolina for an LGBTQ organization because of a joke I do about gender fluidity. Okay?
Yeah.
Which is a funny joke. It's about labels, right?
Right.
And I make fun of everyone. And I have spent my entire adult life fighting for the rights of LGBTQIABCD Americans. Okay.
Right.
And yet you can't take a fucking joke. that's not even like it's unbelievable. It's just incredible that people do not take a moment. What is the intent here? The intent is to make you laugh at yourself. And if you can't do that, then you got a major fucking problem.
Well,
and you know what?
People are too literal.
What was the joke?
People are literalists. Literalism is like the enemy of everything good, I think.
Well, I think, I mean, but
right.
But part of what is, I think, you know, in that context, look, you tell a joke, some people think it's funny, some people don't, right? When you're talking about an organization, though, that is going to hire you or not hire you or cancel your booking, it seems to me that part of the assessment of what that joke means has to be what your record is. Like if they're going to
right,
make an
right,
assessment
right, yes, absolutely.
As to what the intent of that joke is, and I don't even know what the joke is, but it doesn't matter because I do know what you have done. And if you were, you know, you could say that joke, or, you know, Nick DiPaolo could say that joke. And
right.
It means something different when Nick DiPaolo says it.
Right.
Because Nick DiPaolo is a strong supporter of people.
I mean, right. It's just like there, you know, and maybe as I sit in the audience and I've just come and I'm watching you, I can't tell the difference there. And so, like, if I walk up and I'm like, I found that joke disgusting for
right.
both of them, fine. Okay, you're a member of an audience.
They know my record on this.
Right.
You know?
Right. I mean, if you're hired by an organization, though, and theoretically they have the ability to sort of make that assessment, then I think it's a different issue. I went through one of these myself, you know, in December.
Oh yeah, you did recently. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And so,
I remember,
I think, you know,
that was pretty awful.
The company was pretty, was in a pretty good position to sort of put that, joke or, you know, tweet in context.
And it was from so long ago, right?
Well, but yeah, but I mean, that to me was almost secondary to
it was a good joke.
It was
satire.
Well, it's not even, it's a good joke.
Right.
It's like, they shouldn't hire me if it's a bad joke.
Well, no, what I meant was the intent, whether or not you found it
the
funny,
intent,
the intent was clearly one of satire. That was my point.
The intent is clear, and
right.
it's backed up by the fact that I had been on the network for 14 years, that everything I had
right.
ever tweeted about any of that stuff was all online.
But
I mean,
there were those emails to Chris Matthews, producers, being like, I'd really like to do some more. Polanski material on the Hardball
pro
yeah. Right,
but I mean, I think like that, you know, because
he made Chinatown.
I know that you've been outspoken about this in the context of like people being too uptight about jokes, you know, like on college campuses
right.
and whatnot, but I think it's one thing for an audience to reject a joke and another thing for an organization to cancel you, even though your record on this stuff is perfectly clear. Do you know what I mean? Like the
right.
intent matters. I can say,
right.
Hey, sweetheart, please put that down to my daughter. But I can't say
right.
it to, you know, to Jamie, because it's far more, it's inappropriate for me to say it with someone I'm working with. But my daughter,
right.
it's a different context. So it's the word in the context. And part of that context is the relationship I have to that other person. You know, what my history
right.
is of talking in certain ways. I mean, all of that comes to the fore on this stuff.
Oh, but at the same
right.
time, like it does. It depends who you are. It depends on your record. But like, if you are, I don't know, a man making a joke about rape, or if you are a white person and you tell a joke where you say the N-word, you better make sure that joke lands pretty fucking well.
I agree, but I'm saying
well,
that's
no,
also...
It's gotta be. You can make a joke about anything as long as it's a decent joke, you know.
Yeah,
it's true.
I agree,
but it's also you're a comic. You can't. Look, if I did Sam's act, it wouldn't be funny because it's coming from me, and it's not funny when it comes from him too. But I'm just saying.
I was just about to jump in. Like, it wasn't funny the time I did it either.
No, but I'm just saying. Like if Sam can't play answering machine messages from my mother, it's not going to, you know, work. It's just, it's such a subjective thing, and I. You know, I'm a comic, and I happen to be Jewish, and I have always been an outspoken pro-Jew, you know? Even when you're sitting in your little, you know, Jewy enclave with your, you know, your whole social life revolves around, you know, your Jewish community center. I've been out on the road in places where there's no Jews and talked about being a Jew. So don't fucking cancel me from a Jewish gig because you didn't like one of my tweets or something like that. It's just not right.
Yeah, I
think the only part of it that I don't appreciate is the Jewish part.
No, I think.
Just kidding.
I think, in this instance, you know, it's perfectly fine if they don't want to book you, right? I mean, like if they had said,
but
like, you know,
book me.
Right,
you booked
exactly.
Me knowing who I was. What
right.
changed since
right.
then?
Right.
Some big donor who gave $500,000 or $1 million is like, oh, I don't like her. No. And they're like, oh, okay. And that's exactly how they act in the White House.
Wait.
Oh, okay. Oh, I don't want to piss them off.
Well, also, it's sort of like, it's basically like me going down to, the Subaru dealership, putting $2,500 down, buying a car mm-hmm. for, you know, $230 a month, and then like taking it home and going like, wait a second, I thought this thing was a sports car.
Yeah.
Take it back.
Right.
No, sir, we won't. It's a Subaru dealership. What did you think you were getting? I thought it was getting a
Snoop
poor.
Doggy right. Dog for a commercial. Why isn't right. he doing country music?
Talk about picking a lesbian car. Seriously.
Well, I mean, what are you going to do?
Sure.
Mm-hmm. Subaru Outback.
Oh, sorry.
It's a very practical
sorry.
Car.
Oh, sorry.
It's a very practical car.
I can't. Let me tell you something. He has caused division. People are not nice to each other. People are, you know, just completely disrespectful, have no regard for any sort of dignity or integrity. I mean, the fact that someone at Disney Frozen at the curtain call held up a Trump Penn sign.
Oh, I didn't know that.
Oh, my God. And one of the... This is... When you have to, this they're at, it's at the bow, they're at the end of the show, Disney Frozen about love and acceptance and diversity and everyone loves each other. Someone in the front row, holds up a Trump Penn sign, and one of the guys takes the sign and throws it backstage. Now that, and as he clearly writes, I'm not ashamed of what I did. This is the moment where the audience and the cast connect. And thank each other for a wonderful night of theater. And this fucking asshole uses it to protest. You know, this is because they think they can. Because this fucking asshole calls a senator Pocahontas and gets away with it.
Well, this
and
is...
losers. You know?
I'm sorry.
This one's a loser. Whatever.
No, I'm sorry. I think we started making this point, I think, better when we were like, because on one hand, it's so important to just say, like, look, Trump is a Republican, and there's no difference between him and any of the rest of them in terms of substance. I'm sorry. In terms of what they want to do to the environment or people's rights or what kind of Supreme Court they want to have. It's all the same. But where he's obviously different.
He's not a Republican.
He is
not a Republican.
How is he different, Judy, in terms of substance?
First of all, how come no one asked him how many fucking abortions he's paid for?
They don't care.
Wait a second. Who are you comparing that to? Ronald Reagan or Newt Gingrich?
Yeah.
I mean, who? What Republican?
Or the guy that was just reelected in Tennessee who
right.
literally performed abortions on his mistresses. Yeah.
Yeah, like what Republicans are you talking about that they all
Which is
say,
convenient.
Right. They all say they are against abortion. But
right.
I would put the percentage of Republican electeds who have been involved in some fashion or another, wife, daughter, sister, somewhere, I don't know, above 50%.
I was just going to say that in the substance, they're all the same. That's why even anonymous, they say, oh, but we're doing great things on the military and on taxes, which are all horrible things. But the point where he is different is just in terms of the social permission he gives to the type of things Judy's talking about. That is different. And that's a legit point.
Right. Thank you. Thank you very much.
You're welcome. No. No, but I think that was the thing, because when he first came on the scene, it was like, cool. Thank you for no more subtext.
Right.
This is what you all are saying and advocating anyways.
Right.
You're xenophobic. You're corporate-based. You're lying. You rely on white identity politics. We all know this. And it was refreshing that also, in addition to destroying, you know, sort of like semi-men like Rand Paul, that he kind of just came out and said it. But then frigging Mitt Romney, of all people, is right when he talks about trickle-down racism. That all these things that people have in their hearts anyways, now it's like, oh, I can do it because this scumbag is president.
Yeah. I definitely
right, agree. Right.
It might not be the most important thing, but it is good that it's no longer socially acceptable to say openly racist shit, or at least it wasn't until recently.
Well, it's not in our circles.
It's
socially acceptable probably since like the 60s, I feel. I mean, I don't know. Maybe it was in the 80s. Reagan, I would imagine, gave some permission for this kind of stuff too, right?
Well, this shit's always had an enormous amount of permission in this country.
Right.
I think it's, you know, depends on what, narrow circles you're in.
I mean, in terms of like a high-level politician with this level of overt sort of,
I mean, Reagan,
right.
You can go and talk about states' rights,
right?
County.
And also,
but they still have to couch it in that.
And KKK membership skyrocketed under Reagan, too. But yes, if it was Trump, he would have gone to where Reagan announced, and he would have been like, they had to do some tough work here,
didn't they? Yeah,
right.
A lot of good citizen
and what about
work.
What about the simple fact that the guy lies? And lies and lies and lies and every fucking day. And it's like, well, he's just different. You know what? Like, no, it is unacceptable. You can't be the fucking leader of the free world and just fucking make shit up all day long.
Apparently, you can.
Exactly.
Like,
agree to disagree, Judy. Agree to disagree.
He's just the lowest of the low. His hair, like, look at his fucking hair. If there was a woman who was running for office and had hair like that, that's all he would say. He would also, oh, you're going to elect someone with hair like that? Fuck you.
Right.
And when does he fucking spend time with his son?
You know, the only woman who did have hair like Trump, it was
his
mother. That is the most. Yeah. Have you seen those pictures? Yo.
Yeah.
What's that? What's it?
Donald Trump's mom. Because you look at that and you're like, where did this thing come from? It's not analogous to anything else on the planet. And then you see a picture of his mom and you're like, oh, there you go. Look. That's a real picture.
Right. Exactly.
Yeah.
It's like Oompa Loompa.
He is his mom.
Know.
He is his mom. He is absolutely his mom.
Can you imagine the sort of things that happened in that household?
Oh my God. That you ever want to feel bad for it? Yeah, just like, and then that's when dad.
Also, he bears a striking resemblance to Melania's father.
Melania's father.
Oh, now you pronounce it.
Now, whoa, Mr. Pronunciation.
I wasn't even sure what you said. I thought you said like Melania's father.
Melania.
And then,
yeah, I know.
It's creepy.
Totally anonymous.
Menomina's father.
Like, how much longer is this going to go on?
At least 2 years.
No fucking way. He's got to be out.
Yeah. I feel like we had this conversation 2 years ago.
You know what? You get to find out who the op-ed person is when you show us your fucking tax returns, asshole. If you can keep things secret, so can everyone else.
There you go.
Now you're thinking.
All right. Well, Judy,
let's.
I hope people start that as a hashtag.
Oh my God,
you get
pressure.
The C.
You've gotten my blood pressure up.
All right, well, go.
Now you can go watch Barry.
Now you have the recorded version of
Barry. Oh, yeah,
Barry.
I have Barry. I want to wish all of my Hebrew friends a happy and healthy Lashana Tova, Tikatevu, happy, healthy new year.
Let me give you this.
Even though I'm sure you're working, Sam.
I am not.
I'm working.
I'm off Monday and Tuesday.
He doesn't. I'm the bad.
I don't, work on the high holidays. No,
I work.
Never.
Oh, my God.
I don't get a reset.
What are you doing?
I'm going to Worcester for Rosh Hashanah. I go home for one of those holidays, and then I'll go to Shul for Yom Kippur.
You know what, Judy?
I fast.
Yeah.
I fast.
You actually fast?
Oh, sure.
Thank God you're not in here.
Yeah, I do too.
I will also be working, but maybe I'll give my dad a call. I at least send him a text message. That'd be nice, right?
I'm gonna read a Kabbalah
Shana
text.
Tova, Judy. Have a happy new year.
Lashana Tova, and I'm glad you're proud of your...
I try and hide it. It just comes out a little bit. People pick up on
it. Wait, can I just, before we go, is that really true about that white power thing? The hand gesture?
If I had to guess, I would say that she is doing it on purpose to troll people. That's my guess, but maybe not.
And then there's one. Oh no! There's one
someone sent me a photo
behind him.
What's that?
At the Montana rally, a little boy is doing it behind him at the Montana rally.
Well, I'm sure
just
that's
making
real.
Faces. We'll play that. In a little
someone
bit.
Sent me a photo of her husband doing it. I haven't verified it yet, but that's kind of that doesn't look good.
We would never. We don't even know what that means because we're from. She's from Mexico.
Yeah, she's from Mexico, where there's no racism. Yeah. There's absolutely no color distinctions in places like Mexico. It's unheard of.
Judy, always a pleasure.
Go watch Barry.
I love you all.
Go watch Barry. Love you back.
I'm going to watch, but have a lovely weekend, and thanks for getting my blood pressure up to 400.
All right,
get it, girl.
Get some apples and some honey. All right, we'll talk to you later.
You know what? I don't know. For some reason, Judy just reminds me of the day after Trump won. You know, you're doing your like postmortem, like the texts and calls with friends and everything. And Waz called me up, and we literally were silent on the phone for like 30 seconds, and he just pauses and he's like, "Well, we got Barry for another 3 months." That's all he got. It's like a couple more months of Barry.
All right, folks. We do have a Jim Arif cake song. All right, just a reminder. This show relies on its members for its daily operations. You can become a member at jointhemajorityreport.com. JoinTheMajorityReport.com, just dimes and nickels a day. Also, don't forget JustCoffee.coop, Fair Trade Coffee, Tea, or Chocolate. Use the coupon code MAJORITY, get 10% off. Earlier this week, there was a Tuesday, I believe.
Indeed.
And on that Tuesday, the Michael Brooks Show happened. Who, remind us again, who was on there?
Ken Klippenstein, who's a great reporter, was a guest. There's a roadmap for what we could potentially do to end the mass murder and carnage that the U.S. is not just a direct co-participant in daily in Yemen.
Might be the first place I've heard some positive forecasting about that situation.
Yeah, it actually was some positive forecasting. Malcolm Gladwell went into the gulag, and we got some history lessons on McCarthy. Bunch of other segments. Woke Bros on Saturday. This Sunday, illicit history of Lula da Silva and the Workers' Party. And then, of course, we're back next Tuesday. Can I just mention one other thing really quick? I forgot to before. This Sunday, my friend Chris Hamilton, who's a really good stand-up comedian, is shooting some type of pilot, and it's called Taboo Talk, and I'm going to be on a panel on interracial dating, and it's going to be at 9 p.m. at the Pine Box Rock Shop in Bushwick in Brooklyn.
What are you talking about?
I thought it was pretty self-explanatory what I was talking about. So if you're in the city...
Where is it?
It's at the Pine. Actually, you've been there because this is where Zepps used to do his show.
Oh, yeah, that place.
It's at the Pine Box Rock Shop, which is 12 Grattan Street in Brooklyn.
They have very good vegan empanadas there.
It's a nice...
If anyone gets hungry.
It's actually a very... I would go there if I wasn't on completely the other side of Brooklyn. Anyways, that's 9 p.m. on Sunday. It'll be fun, and I'll be there.
And Jamie, the Antifada...
Hell yeah. So we have just released two, what are we calling them? Singles? I don't know. Standalone episodes. One is my interview with Nora Singh, the front woman of LA punk band Hit Bargain. We talk about all kinds of interesting things. The other is Andy. He interviewed the people who run a radical space called Woodbine in Ridgewood, Queens. And we have now nailed down a release date for the somewhat elusive third single from Sean, which is about historical materialism. And I listened to it last night, and I think it's going to be worth the wait. I mean, of course,
Sean, if you're listening, it's good. Don't worry about it.
Of course, I'm going to say this because, like, it's my show and I want people to listen to it. Also, I am his wife, but it's so good. Like, I actually teared up a little bit at the end when he was talking about how historical materialism gives us the tools that we need to understand where capitalism came from and how we can defeat it.
You make your wife a cry, it's a bitterness. She like a communism. Sean, high five.
Matt?
That's true.
Literary Hangover, we talked about a history of sort of early settlement of America. Check it out. It's going to be on YouTube this weekend. It takes 13 hours for me to render those videos, so I got to do it over the weekend.
Wow, but, okay.
Takes a bit of time.
Matt, let's take a look at the Jimmy Reefcake song of the week. What is it? What is the name of the song?
Well, it looks like he's brought in some other musical talent here. Whoa. So it's called Authoritarian MAGA Hypocrite, and it's Jimmy Reefercake featuring Adam Rainstopper.
Ooh, okay.
Authoritarian MAGA Hypocrite. Took a hammer to his TV set in front of his two little daughters, cause they refused to respect their father. No more social media, no more online games. Now you will play games in the old-fashioned way. Authoritarian, MAGA hypocrite. You're the one on Facebook asking posting shit. National TV in a fit of rage, and then you post a picture of it on your Facebook page. Authoritarian, MAGA hypocrite. You're the one on Facebook asking posting shit all the time. Racist memes. The blacks are the real racists to you, it seems. Authoritarian, MAGA hypocrite. You're the one on Facebook asking posted shit. I thought you were freedom-loving libertarian, but you're a Trumpy-loving authoritarian. Authoritarian, MAGA hypocrite. You're the one on Facebook asking posted shit. I posted about the Native American genocide. You said the smallpox faking story was a lie. Authoritarian, MAGA hypocrite. Unfriending you when I had enough of it. I thought you were a libertarian and kind of cool, but you authoritarian hypocrite fool. You say Black Lives Matter is full of hypocrisy, but look yourself, you ought to be feeling ashamed about your rage. You say you post a picture of it on your Facebook page. Authoritarian, MAGA hypocrite. You're the one on Facebook asking posting shit. I wonder why I stayed Facebook friends with you for so long, but then you helped me write the lyrics of this song. All right, authoritarian, good job. Hey, this is Adam Rainstopper. Don't stop, Rainstopper, stop it, don't stop it, come on, yeah. Authoritarian, MAGA hypocrite. You're the one on Facebook asking posting shit, 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 shit. You hypocrite, bring it out now. Authoritarian, MAGA hypocrite. You're the one on Facebook asking posted shit. Well, that's it, everybody. That's the story. And I got more and more and more of it. Reefcake reggae time. Reefcake reggae time. Rum pa pum pa da 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 dum 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 da 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 dum bum ba ba bum bum. Rum pum pum. Dum da 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 dum be dum ba 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 bum. Rum pum pa dum pum da 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 dum bum dum dum. Oh, this is great, man. Thanks, Adam Rainstopper. Thank you, Majority Report. This is how we do it. This is the new style. Peace. And dance.
I'm not mad at that.
Wow.
I'm not mad at that at all.
Not a huge fan of ska, but it's definitely better than The Doors.
Well, I just think it deserves points just for shaking things up and the production value there. Very, very nice.
I also like how the weed is bedded in the music because it's like weed definitely helped inspire the genre. So it's almost like it doesn't even need to be said.
Yeah, I'd say semiology, man. It's
that's
deep.
Probably the most I've ever enjoyed ska in my entire life.
There you go.
Agreed.
All right. I'm going to take a quick break and head into the fun half. And today, accompanying our La Poupée into the fun half, the video of Jared Kushner waiting out in front of a door. This is... Where was he? Where was this?
I believe he was outside the Treasury.
U.S. Trade Representative door, and apparently he was going in for talk about NAFTA negotiations. And here he is walking up. I guess this is in D.C. And the reporters are there, and apparently they didn't realize Jared was coming. And so La Poupée, Jared Kushner, just waiting.
NAFTA with Canada, is it okay?